Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom." And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting articles posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And before you leave that page, do me a favor, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcast on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read or download, or share with your friends, and check out the Time for an Awakening Marketplace in our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. A lot of interesting things being posted on Time for Awakening Marketplace. It kind of changes every day. I want you to check it out. Put that in your address bar to make that one of your favorites. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we have a special guest joining us, Sister Shanika Chinadu of the African Diaspora Returnees Association. Right now, Sister Chinadu is in Gambia, and this is an organization primarily set up to offer help and support for diasporans returning home to the motherland. We'll talk about the organization with Sister Chinadu and introduce her to our Time for Awakening audience. After we get back, after our opening and a brief word from some of our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tanger. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening here at 7:14 here in the city of Philadelphia on a Sunday evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum, Philadelphia, at 7th and R Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellie.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, it's, here we go. We got a nice kind of temperature going on a little, you know, today. So I've been out there sweating and moving and feeling the breeze. Yeah. So that's always good.
Yeah, I know it's supposed to be 4 days in a row of over 90, so they consider that a heat wave.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so I know you'll be in paradise during this period.
I got to ask the sister, what's the temperature like over in Gambia?
You know, I'm glad that we were able to reach out to Sister Shekina Chinadu. And it kind of, my mind goes back to some of the callers that we've had, you know, over the time that we've been doing the program. brother that calls frequently out of Chicago, and I know he's a listener, that would always implore our people, we got to get out of here. You know the call, Richard.
Right, yes.
And it's a young brother that calls out of North Jersey that talked about our people leaving here. He wants to get out of here and things of that nature, and nobody's doing anything. Well, on Time for an Awakening, we're going to always reach out nationwide, diaspora-wide, and worldwide to brothers and sisters that are doing something so we can let our listening audience know that there's things being done and you can join in with them or start chapters in your city. It's work that you can do. This sister is no exception. But the organization that she has started, the African Diaspora's Returnees Association, is helping black folks that want to return to the continent from the diaspora to get acclimated to the continent. We want to welcome Sister Shekinah Chinadu to Time for an Awakening. She's on the international line. So, Sister Chinadu, can you hear?
I can hear you fine.
This is Sister Shekinah Chinadu of the African Diaspora's Returnees Association, and glad to have you on Time for an Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing there, Sister?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Sister Shekinah, or do you want me to call you Sister Chinadu, or it doesn't matter?
Shekinah.
Oh, Shekinah. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Sister Shekinah, that's listen. Okay. Before we talk about the organization, let's talk about you. Because you were okay. In London, as I understand it.
I was in Northamptonshire.
Yeah, before your journey to
I am a London girl at heart.
Before your journey to the continent. Talk about yourself, what made you want to take this journey to return to the continent. Just go into a little bit about your mindset and thinking before you even started this organization. Talk about yourself and your journey back to the motherland.
Okay. As you know, I was born in the UK to Caribbean parents that migrated to the UK in the 60s. And I come from a home where it was very African-centered. Okay. So hearing about Africa as I was growing up, the Afrin War, the founding fathers who liberated the African continent somewhat in the 60s, I was privy to those sort of conversations with my dad and my mum, black images in the home, etc. So being told that I was African from a very young age was something that I held on to and passed on to my own children. So moving to Africa for me is not a surprise to my family because, you know, that's sort of what was expected of us. At first, I had plans to move back to the Caribbean because that's where my parents were going to. But in 2005, I took a trip to Gambia. And when I came to Gambia, I just thought, wow, this is no different to the Caribbean, really. Plus, you've got the benefits of being where we started from. And my plans changed immediately for retirement. And I said, right, I've got about 12 years until, one, my last child finished university, and two, my goal to retire at 50 was in that time. And I thought, right, I could do this, and set my plan in motion to leave the West.
Sister Shekinah, you mentioned that you were from an African-centered home, and
yes,
you know, myself and Brother Richard have interviewed many people on Time for an Awakening, and sometimes that's always a reoccurring theme with a lot of our people that have become activists in some form or fashion, that they've come from a centered home that has given them a solid background. Richard, would you agree?
Definitely.
Yeah, and it just struck me as soon as she mentioned that. But talk about some of our brothers and sisters there in the UK. I know things are similar in the UK as here in the United States. Similar people, similar background heritage. White supremacy is the functioning system in place. Talk about the mindset of some of our people. Here it kind of spans the gamut of what's going on with our people in the mind and their mindset. Talk about the brothers and sisters in the UK. Do they want to be English? Do they have a desire to go back to the continent or back to the Caribbean? What is going on with the minds of our people there in England? Just talk about it from your understanding and just your perspective.
Okay, I would say it's threefold. There are some that just want to go back to the Caribbean because they believe that's who they are. They're Caribbean people. Second group is those that want to carve out a piece of comfortability in the UK because they were born there and they feel that, well, you know, the West is okay and I can, as long as I can carve out a little piece, I'm okay. And then you've got those that said, no, I will return to Africa at some stage because that's where it all began for themselves, their lineage and their ancestry. So I think it's three types of people that we have in the UK at the moment.
Sister Jakina, you mentioned out of the three types, it's one type that says that they would rather return to the Caribbean because that's where their people are. Do they, and question, and I'm just curious, do they see the brothers and sisters in the Caribbean as somehow different than brothers and sisters from the motherland?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, remember, you have to go back some, you know, decades where some parents would tell their children that, you know, Africa is nothing to do with them in the Caribbean. You know, we're completely different people. You know, at one stage, you know, some people find it an offense to be called African. I remember the days at school where it wasn't cool to be termed as an African. It was almost like an insult. So for some people, you know, they would say, you know, I'm Jamaican, I'm Antiguan, I'm Trinidadian, I'm Grenadian, and that's it. You know, Africa has nothing to do with me. I'm from the Caribbean, and that's it, and that's where I'm going to return. And a lot of that has been, you know, what they've been told by their parents, by their family background, that, you know, they are Caribbean and that's it. They don't really want to hear anything else.
Richard, I want you to listen. I'm glad the sister's on here to kind of give us a little background. Do you see something strikingly similar here? I want to be Indian. I'm not black. I'm not from the islands. They're different. I'm not, do you see something strangely similar here, Richard?
As someone would say, the brainwash being in effect, yes. African as a global identity, because it is a global experience, yes. I see that. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And, I had no idea what Sister Shakina was going to say. I had that question on my mind. And the listening audience has heard her explanation of the three mindsets going on with our brothers and sisters that's in England or in the UK area. So, okay, Sister Shakina.
Raises a question for me, Sister Shakina. Now that we're in the context of the year of turn, I don't know, you know, since you're in Gambia, for those in England and London, you know, of Caribbean ancestry, are they engaged in this year of return? I don't know what you want to call it. But do you perceive, and I know you're somewhere else now, but do you have a sense that the people of the England are now African Caribbean people are engaged in that?
Some are, particularly the ones that are affiliated to their African heritage. Mm. Yes, definitely. I think for me personally, I have some issues with this year of return.
Thank you. Excuse me.
Good.
Now, for me, and this is my personal opinion, I can't say this is the majority opinion, this is my personal opinion. until those African leaders welcome us home as Africans, this year of return to me seems like, you know, we want you to come, we want you to invest in Africa, we want you to bring your skills and everything else, but we are not going to furnish you with a passport or with citizenship or, you know, to actually welcome you home as the lost children of Africa. So to me, it's a little bit of a fraudulent year of return. I'm not buying into it as yet until I'm fully accepted as who I am by the leadership.
Which raises some questions, but we'll explore that later. I definitely see your point of view and agree.
Sister Kina, and I agree, Richard, because I wanted to travel that path, that question you just asked. But I want to cover a couple more points before we even get there. Sister Shakina, when you got to the continent and kind of got settled, what made you, was the organization, I know it had to be already in your mind before you left England. Did the organization get off the ground in England, or did you kind of get it off the ground in Gambia?
No, it all happened in Gambia.
Okay.
And, you know, it's funny, I'm very much a believer in the ancestors, and it wasn't really something I had planned. It's something that fell into my lap and I ran with it.
Okay.
So I cannot say I had plans for it or, you know, I knew what it was going to happen. It's something that happened by default and I ran with it.
Now go into a little bit of that. What kind of made that mindset or that genesis of an idea, and what made you kind of run with it, as you said?
Okay, well, we started talking about citizenship and, you know, following on from what I said, that, you know, we must be welcomed across the continent as the lost children of Africa because we are returning through our ancestors. And in many African countries, there are talk, you know, there is talk from diasporans returning about what they require from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're coming home, we're bringing our skills, we're bringing our resources, we're bringing all sorts of things to help develop Africa, but we don't seem to be getting anything back. So, you know, in a number of countries, people are talking about citizenship. And in most African constitutions, they do talk about citizenship, but for their own people that were born on the continent or had grandparents from the continent, there's no mention of the children of the enslaved that were stolen from Africa hundreds of years ago returning. There's not one constitution, and I've looked at all 52 of them, there's not one constitution that talks about our return and how we're going to be treated during that return.
Okay.
So when we started talking about citizenship, that's where the idea really came up in terms of, you know, we need an organization to assist our people when we get here. There's a lot of things that people don't know. I mean, I've been coming to Gambia for almost 15 years. So I know a little bit about how to navigate myself around the country. But that's not the same for everybody. When you first land here, whether it's on holiday, whether it's to stay for a short time, whether it's to return for good, you need to know how to navigate. There's certain things you need to know to help that navigation to be smooth. And so the organization was something to assist with that. But it was two-pronged because it's about support. But then on the second prong, it's about the citizenship. And currently, Gambia is rewriting their constitution. They had a 1997 constitution, which they are rewriting to change from the old regime to the new regime. And so it was a apt time to get our message into that constitution about what we require as returnees of descendants of the enslaved that were stolen from Africa.
Now, before we get to the second part, some of the things, the second part of some of the areas that you're working in. Let's deal with some of the first ones, the first parts that you help returnees with. Things like opening a bank account, how to extend your visa and apply for annual residency permit. Talk about some of those things, because a lot of people, when they talk about maybe going to an area or even relocating, some of these things might not be in the forefront of their minds, but you kind of help some of our people that are returning from the diaspora to facilitate some of these things. Go ahead and talk on some of these points.
Yes, what I tend to do is look at the areas where people may need help. And, you know, those are some of the areas that you've mentioned that people often need help with, you know, how to get their tax number, how to open a bank account. Maybe if they want to set up a business, how they can set up a business. More importantly, how they can buy land, purchase land or purchase a house, because these things are different systems from the West, what they're used to. Particularly take one, for instance, buying land. It's not easy at all in Africa because it's a very different monster to what we're used to in the West. And, you know, in fact, most of the time we can't afford to buy a plot of land in the West because it's so out of our economic reach. We often just buy a house that's been built by developers and we just move into that. But, you know, in Africa and the Caribbean, you can buy a plot of land, you can build your own house and own that outright. No mortgage for 25, 30 years. You know, you build it cash, you buy the land cash and you own it, and then you can pass it on to your descendants. So I realized that those were the type of issues that our people needed help with. And being a lawyer, I thought, you know, I was in a good place to assist our people, that when they came, that they wouldn't make mistakes that could be quite damaging to them, but to try and assist them. So, you know, I may take them to the tax office to get their tax number, take them to the bank, you know, and assist them through opening a bank account, tell them what paperwork is required, documents, you know, help them buy in land, check the paperwork, do all the other legal checks for them and go through the payment plans, etc. with them. So it's just a matter of helping them with, you know, every time I learn something, I'm then able to help other people with that as well.
Good. Richard, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I wanted to know, go to the returnees. When you actually went to Gambia and started to, you know, create your roots there, were there already other returnees in Gambia that you had association, was able to create association with from the diaspora?
Yes, there were many people here that I've made contact with over the 15 years. Some have been here, you know, a lot longer than I have. And again, doing different things themselves. So yes, I did have a network of people that I knew of that were here already. There was an association some years ago, but I don't think it's as functional, to date. So I decided to resurrect something, but with a slightly different feel that would really capture people literally from, you know, the airport to wherever they needed to go to, whether that's, you know, living in their house or whatever it might be. So I just decided that, you know, it was something more that people needed, and they needed it now, so that, you know, it could save them from any bad experience. I mean, Africa's beautiful, it's wonderful, but we have to tell the truth. And there's, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly side to it as well. And, you know, if we're not truthful with our people and we just give them this rose-tinted glasses that, you know, everything's perfect in Africa, then they're going to have a rude awakening.
Which raises the question, because at one time earlier, I think it was Nigeria, was also, and it might have been in the 80s, 90s, was talking about return and citizenship. And one of the things that came up was the people of host countries, as say Nigeria or Ghana, the population itself may have had mixed views about the diasporans coming and getting citizenship. in the time that you've been in Gambia, has that been, have you heard that kind of discussion, or is that the kind of discussion in the pop culture, whether that be the city or the rural?
No, I've heard the opposite. In fact, the Gambians welcome us coming home, and they all agree that we should have citizenship. We should be recognized as African when we come home. And I think the difference is that they recognize that compared to the Indian and the Chinese and the Lebanese who are coming to Africa and are taking more than they're giving to Africa, that we are different. We are giving. You know, we're not coming here to take anything. We're bringing our residual capital. We are banking here. We are spending here. We are helping to develop here. We're creating jobs. And we're, you know, treating the Africans in a better way than other people coming onto the continent who are really just here for their own ends. You know, they're coming to rape and pillage as they have always done. But we're coming very differently because this is our home. We're not going to rape and pillage our own home.
You know, that's great. And I was wondering also for those of us who are looking at repatriation and citizenship, you know, and your experience as first going to Gambia, the cultural, if it was a cultural shock, is there such thing? Or I understand saying in relationship to the structural understandings we have to have in order to get a tax ID number and account number. Is there cultural understandings that we have to have coming from the West as we go into a country in a cultural matrix like Gambia?
Yes and no. If your mindset is already adapted to going home, if you call it home, then you're going to find some differences, but you're willing to adapt. Using Gambia as an example, it's a very religious country. It's a Muslim country. The majority are Muslims. There are some Christians and other religions, but the majority, 85% at least, are Muslim. And there are some cultural differences, which, you know, at one stage was our culture, but, you know, we've been detached from that. So we have to reconnect with that. So, yes, there are some cultural nuances that we have to get used to and learn and be patient with. And also, if you're religious, then, you know, you might slot into something. If you're not, again, that could be another little hurdle that you have to overcome. But, yeah, so, really, when you're coming home, your mindset has to change before you land here. You shouldn't really change your mindset as you arrive on the tarmac. Your mindset should start changing before you actually arrive here.
Great.
that's
definite.
Yeah, Richard, you know, I hear so many common themes that we talk about all the time on the program coming from Sister Shekinah. Is kind of, no, I wouldn't say scary. It's just refreshing to hear. We were just talking about the necessity for our minds to be changed moving forward. Yeah, we'll get into that later. Sister Shekinah, tell us, from where are a lot of the returnees that you've experienced coming from? Are they coming from England? Are they coming from the islands? Are they coming from the United States? Or does it kind of vary?
It's a good mixture. I would say at the moment in Gambia, there's more from the UK, some from the Caribbean are coming slowly, and we're definitely getting more Americans coming now to Gambia. So that's a welcome change, because over the years, many years ago, I didn't see many Americans, but we're getting more now. I suppose, you know, Gambia is a very small country, and I always say to people, if you're thinking of moving to Africa, because Gambia is very small, it's very stable in terms of the environment and economically, it's a really good stepping stone before you move on to anywhere else. It's a good place to get your feet wet before you move on to any other country on the continent. So I think a lot of people are doing that. You know, they will come to Gambia, they'll say, yes, I like here, but I still want to explore other places, which is good because, as I said, you can get your feet wet here, get a taste of what the continent's going to be like, and then move on if that's what you wish.
If I may, your mindset has been prepared to embark on this transition to back home. Now, what is your suggestion as far as preparation? Actually, besides the mindset that a person or family has to put in place in order to make that step, to where they can get your assistance in Gambia, what's the thing that they should be considering in that process?
The first thing I'd say is have a plan. I had a 12-year plan, so I had a long time to put things in place. Some people might just move on a whim. It's not the best idea. It is better to have a plan. You've got to think about how you're going to survive here, how you're going to generate an income. In Gambia, it's not easy to get a job. It's near on impossible, to be quite honest, because most of the African continent has a very young population. Gambia is no different. 18 to 35 is the majority age group in Gambia. And I think it's about 50% that don't have a job. So that's quite a high percentage. So I agree that, any jobs should go to Gambians first so that we make sure we employ our people if they're not entrepreneurial. However, where they may not benefit from that is that if the capacity is not here, we are coming from the diaspora with many varied skills. They should utilize our skills to build up that capacity. But what tends to happen is that if an employer employs a non-Gambian, they're slapped with a 40,000 Dalasi tax bill every year for that employee, which means they are put off from employing a returnee who might be able to build capacity within the company. So that is a catch-22, really. I understand the need to, provide jobs for our youth, but at the same time, not all of our youth have the capacity to do the work that we require them to do.
And for in that process, taking that for that would be say a business person or a skilled person in relationship to making that transition. What about retirees as a part of their plan? They have a pension and they're now at the point where they want to return, so they have a income here. Is it impossible to transfer that pension income in a place like Gambia?
No, many people receive their pensions here. I imagine they could set up different accounts where they could receive that money, or their relatives back in the West could send the money to them through different money transfer forums. But even retired people are still doing things here, because a few of us have not waited until retirement age. We've actually retired early. I mean, I use myself as an example. I retired at 50. I've been retired almost 6 years. I'm still young enough. I don't need to be sitting down all day doing nothing. and so I do these things. And there are other people who don't just want to sit around doing something because, as I said before, we have come to develop. We've given our skills for many, many years to the West. And, they've never appreciated it, no matter how many degrees or how much qualifications or how much track record you've got in doing your job. You're always made to know that, you should be grateful for the crumbs that they've given you. So why not come and bring those skills here and develop our own land that we can call home? So many of us are actually doing that, where we're utilizing the skills that we built up in the West and we're using it for the benefit of our own countries.
Sister Shekina, the going to Gambia in particular, is it, and I know it's always good for someone to go there with skills, maybe a business acumen that they had in the West, whatever country you came from, whether it's the United States, the diaspora in the islands, or even England. Is it easy to set up business there? And that's kind of a two-pronged question. And what businesses are kind of in demand by people there, or kind of spans the gamut?
It is quite easy to set up a business because Gambia is a developing country. So it's easy to find niche businesses in terms of to help with the development. Two of the businesses that I run, one is a health business that I had in the UK had started, Nubian Health, which is about encouraging our people to eat more healthy and to use non-chemical based skincare products that won't damage our bodies. So that's one business that I do. And the second business, which again came really unplanned here, as a retired person, I thought I'd put law behind me, but I realized that our people do need help here with project management in terms of building, purchasing land, as I said, court complaints, representation in court, you know, and those sorts of support legally. So I've decided to reopen a legal practice down here and use those skills to help our people. So currently I assist people in buying land. I'm currently building a house for somebody because he's not here, or he and his family are not here. And it's sometimes, just like in the Caribbean, no different, it's not always safe to just send money to someone in another country who you don't really know what they're doing with your money. So I offer that service to returnees, or those thinking about returning but not returned yet, that I will project manage their bills for them and make sure that everything's done properly and receipted for. So that's currently what I do at the moment. We have something else that we've just done. And I don't know if it's a first in Africa. I think it might be, but I'm not sure. We're going to be celebrating our first diasporan returnee housing estate, particularly for us. Some people want to live amongst, you know, people that are familiar to them, and there's nothing wrong with that, mm-hmm. and have familiar things around them. An opportunity was given to me earlier this year, 40 plots of land. I thought about it for about 5 minutes and decided, you know what, I think our people could benefit from this.
Wait a minute. You said you thought about it for 5 minutes?
Literally for 5 minutes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Literally for 5 minutes. When the opportunity came and the person said, you know, I've got 40 plots of land. Do you want them? I thought, yes, why not? And the first thing I thought about is, you know, we need our own housing estate so that, you know, if people want to come and, you know, live amongst themselves, as I said, they can do that. So I'm hoping that we're going to be, the process has started. I'm doing all the legal paperwork now, and I'm hoping to have the opening ceremony in November of this year. And we'll have it on the land. We'll pay homage to the ancestors. And will be an estate for the ancestors to welcome them back home through us. And there will be, you know, a number of different entertainments that we will have during that day just to celebrate our achievements as returnees.
Wow. So, let me, because if I am somewhat clear about this, and when you say the estate, are you saying 40 plots of a land that can be acquired, and on it already I'm gonna call residential living space for those who want to return, or is it just a land to build the residential space for those who want to return?
It's empty plots of land.
80, excuse me.
Yeah, that. And would you believe that the 40 plots were sold in 3 days?
Oh, you know, y'all ain't tell us about it. Excuse
me. Don't worry, another estate is coming soon. Because this one is going so well, I've decided to do another one. So it's 40 plots, empty land, and our people then be able to build their houses on those plots and create an estate.
Okay. That's great. That's fantastic.
You know, because I want to go into that second part that Sister Shakina was talking about as far as campaigning in the Constitution and for citizenship. I think that's an interesting discussion, Richard.
Right.
And we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we'll continue the discussion. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're talking with Sister Shakina Chinadu of the African Diaspora Returnees Association, helping people get acclimated back in the continent. In the country of Gambia. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I say that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the Slave Theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Let me just say this.
before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's Sunday evening here in the city of Philadelphia at 8:03. We're returning with our guest, Sister Shekina Chinadu of the African Diaspora's Returnees Association. She's telling us about the organization and how they're getting our people acclimated to coming back to the continent, to the country of Gambia in particular, and getting them settled in and all of the things that they would need to make that transition smooth. Sister Shekina, are you there?
I'm still here.
Great, great. Got a couple callers online. Let's go to Newport News. Hello, brother.
Oh, brother. How you doing, brothers?
Great, great, great.
I was just trying to get some information to send to the sister. I don't want to butcher her name. You know, I got that southern slow tongue. So I just stuck it in your chat over there, some direct information to Eric and Lisa Shepherd, who have been doing the diversity restoration project in Zambia for about 10 years. I had the pleasure of visiting with them the last 2 years and actually spoke with the Zambian ambassador for about an hour just about 3 weeks ago, sit down with him. So I just wanted to connect and send some information in case they can be helpful since they're on the continent too. That's all.
Sister Shekina, can you... I think we're getting a little feedback. That might be coming from you and Brother Odin. Can you give the caller your contact where he can send the information?
Yes. Would you like me to say it out on air or?
Wait a minute. Brother Odin, I think you got your volume up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's getting feedback.
I'm trying to get it down now. I think I've got it down low enough.
Okay. Sister Shakina, go ahead.
Yes. Would you like me to provide my email address over the air, or?
If you, well, I'll tell you what. I'll pass it along to him. Just put it. Just send it to me in email, and I'll get it to you, Brother Odin.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll stick my email in the chat.
Good. I'll do that.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Let's go to 646. 646. Caller, are you there?
Greetings, brother. This is a black man screaming, calling out of New York. If you remember me, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
This is Maurice Carver. I'm doing great.
Hey,
I'm doing
how you doing?
Peace and blessings to all of you brothers and sisters out there listening. I'm glad to see that this brother and his organization and the information that you're putting out there, I'm really enjoying the show, my brother, and I'm so glad just to call in and say, you know, I want to pass my blessings on to you, man. You know, 21 years we've been on the air, and I wish that for you and your organization and stuff. You know, it's time for awakening is true. I mean, when I listen to this particular program talking about going home and stuff, I think about the birthday of Marcus Garvey, and I think about what he said, liberate the minds of men, and ultimately you will liberate the bodies of men. And so when you brothers are out there providing this important information and stuff, especially when we're talking about going back to Africa, so you remember, Brother Elliot, when they had the Joseph Project with Ghana, you know how many people pushed it to move forward with that situation, and then the dealing with the dual citizenship and with the land and all that. I'm glad that we have a sister that is in Gambia right now. I think the capital city, Banjul, is the capital city and stuff.
It is.
And so I'm glad that we... Yeah, so I'm glad that we have a sister, because I actually connected with another sister. I don't know if you know her, Khadija Sasse, the author, poet of Sable Lit Mag, and we've been doing stuff together. She's an expatriate from England. She's going back and forth to England and Gambia. So I'm glad to see, sister, that you are educating our people out here. Brother Elliot, you keep it going strong, man. I love you. I love everything that you're doing, man. God bless.
Man, it's been years since I heard. I got to give you a call. Man, wow. I'm happy to hear from you, man.
Yes, definitely.
We'll talk soon.
Peace.
Richard, I just want to... That brother Maurice Carver is a good brother. Me and one of the former hosts on the... Brother Reg did his TV program up there in Brooklyn. Wow, it might have been 8 years ago now. A good brother, man, conscious brother. I got to get a hold of him. It's good hearing from him. Sister Shakina?
Yes?
The second part that Brother Richard mentioned earlier, the campaign for citizenship for our people returning to the continent. Talk about that, because I'm reading some of what you have here, and you mentioned about the request to apply for citizenship after returning within 2 to 4 years, also to be open for our children and grandchildren down the line.
Yes.
Give us a little background on that.
Okay, so that was launched last November, because I found out probably a bit in September, October, that Gambia was rewriting their constitution, because we've had a change of regime. After we had a president for 22 years, they realized that the constitution we had needed to be wider and maybe more equitable for our people. So they're rewriting it currently. So I thought that would be a really good opportunity to get our requests into that. Now, what I didn't just want an executive order. And that's been done before in Gambia, where, you know, the president can decide to give, you know, a number of people citizenship. I thought, you know, that was not long lasting. It's not really conducive to our return home. What I thought would be better is to have it enshrined in law, so that in 20 years time, we wouldn't be fighting for citizenship again when, you know, another batch of people are coming home, that it should be enshrined in law, that it's there. Currently, the constitution says that if you're married to a Gambian, after 7 years you can apply for citizenship, or if you're unmarried to a Gambian, you wait 15 years. Now I think both of those are not conducive to what we require. You know, you shouldn't have to marry, and you shouldn't have to wait 15 years. That's too long. You know, some people may not even make those 15 years. They may die before those 15 years, particularly, you know, some of the ages that some people are coming. And, you know, a lot of us that have come home have something in our mindset why we're here, that we know that we're African, or we want to, you know, consider ourselves with Africans on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very unfair that we should be lumped into the same box as everybody else when our situation is quite peculiar, considering our history, our ancestral history. You know, it's not our fault that we were born in the diaspora. It's not our fault that we were raised differently. You know, we were taken by default. So, you know, we ended up where we ended up by default. And, you know, if our history wasn't interrupted, many of us would have been born on the continent. So we should be treated as such. So they were asking for submissions. So I went to the Constitution Review Commission and I presented a presentation to them explaining, you know, what we want, why we want it, and how we want it. So what I proposed to them is that maybe they should consider a 2 to 4 year of continuous living here, citizenship application situation for us, particularly for us only. I'm not talking about the Indians coming, the Chinese, the Arabs, anybody else. I'm talking about us, descendants of the enslaved, who are returning home because we want to by choice. And we should have a different situation in terms of citizenship. So what I've asked is for 2 to 4 years where we can apply for citizenship. And this should be spread generationally for our lineage. If our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren also want to return home. So that is being considered right now. And they are drafting the first draft, which will go to Parliament for ratification. And we should hear something by the end of the year. So I'm very hopeful. You know, we've asked the ancestors to work with those who are putting the constitution together and guide them and, you know, make them make the right decision for us. So I'm hopeful that we'll get something out of it. And I'm just waiting patiently right now. And it's given me some hope because, you know, last week I got a call to resend the PowerPoint presentation. And also had another call to remind them of the actual date I went in to do the presentation. So I know that they are considering us quite a bit. We do get invited to meetings, etc. So it wasn't a matter of just, okay, we heard from you, thank you very much, goodbye. Everything that they're doing, they do include us in. So I know that they are listening to us and trying to accommodate us. So I'm waiting patiently, and I'm hoping that by the end of the year, we will have some good news to share with the diaspora that, you know, we've been considered in the Constitution in whatever shape or form that may be.
You know, go ahead, Richard. It's interesting that, thank you. Congratulations on making the presentation. You know, and thinking through how a state, an African state, should consider us in the diaspora, because I know that's not an easy task to even go through, especially if you're saying the country, because of its internal politics, writing its constitution. So giving them that thought in this moment, you know, is definitely, you know, one of those ancestral spiritual kind of things, if you want to put it in that context. But it raises the question about the politics of Gambia, if you would like to share, or to the degree you're aware. It seems that it, even in being open to this request, is it because of the Gambia is also considering the broader politics that's going on around with the AU talking about integration of the borders and the whole thing of the diaspora or the AU with the sixth district and having that kind of representation. Does Gambia and its internal politics have, as you see it, making any linkages to the AU and its more, I guess you say, geopolitical politics?
I haven't heard anything internally. I haven't even heard them mention the sixth region from the AU or any other. There is a policy in the AU about descendants of the enslaved return. I haven't heard anything mentioned in Gambia about that at all. Hence why I thought it was important to do the presentation and raise those tensions to them. I have had a lot of support from a particular Pan-African minister in Gambia who recognizes the strength and recognizing the blueprint that our founding fathers, particularly in Nkrumah, left with us, where they recognize that, you know, Africa would never be free or developed unless we all work together. It doesn't matter whether we're on the continent or not, but diasporans and continental Africans have to work together if we're going to be self-sufficient and self-reliant. So what I'm trying to say to the government here is that, you know, we are here. We've got the skills. We've got some cash. You know, we're willing to bank here. We're willing to raise the GDP so that we don't have to go to the IMF and the World Bank and all these other places that just hold us in debt. Why not work together with the diasporans? Why not encourage diasporans to come home, bring their resources, bring their skills, and let's develop Africa together and really make, you know, this, the meaning of independence, make it really meaningful, because right now we're not independent. I don't care what anyone says, we're not independent. We're still too reliant on other things. I mean, if you look at the Francophone African countries, they're still in shackles.
Yes.
And, you know, even our judiciary and all sorts of things, we're still under the clutches of colonialism. So how do we free ourselves from that? And the only way to do that is to become economically free and politically free.
Do you see, you know, as and you raise an important point, which is the reason why I'm trying to get a sense of, and we bandy around here, how much of what's going on now in the broader politics and, you know, besides the AU, because it's difficult to see what's going on, what is the political sentiment in each country, and getting even more closer down to the ground as it relates to the advocacy of including Africans in the diaspora. So I'm asking, you know, when you raise about the Francophone and even the way the political process occurs, is there space for for the kind of is there a lot of political will to consider in Gambia, the diaspora? And mentioned the representative. Is there others besides him who recognize the historical context? I guess I'm trying to get to.
Not enough. I would say the youth are being galvanized now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the young people now, I've noticed a sea change where they are literally saying, look, we've tried things our parents' way, the leaders' way, you know, from back in the day. We've tried that. It's not working for us. Let's return to Pan-Africanism.
Oh,
and
great.
See if we can resurrect that, that will work for us. They're recognizing now that, you know, unless we do for self, we're never going to be free from the clutches of what's holding us down. And there's a sea change now of a, you know, group of young, conscious, African-born youth who are saying, look, we've got to return to the old ways. We've got to look back at what Marcus Garvey said, what Nkrumah said, what Kenyatta said, what Haile Selassie. We've got to look back to those founding fathers and pick up that mantle and run with that, because we seem to have lost our way with that. We, you know, we started off well with it, and then I think we got comfortable, and this is why we're where we are now. But these young people are saying, you know what? No, we're going to pick that back up, and we're going to run with it, and we're going to resurrect that, because they believe that's going to work for them.
Sister Shekinah, you were talking about you took the proposal before some of the lawmakers. Because I want to relate this to our experience here. Because what we see on the television, whenever they talk about the continent, they talk about governments that have been destabilized. What they don't talk about is generally the puppets that are in place, and then maybe people are fighting against those puppets. But all you see is the violence in certain areas. They never focus in on the stable governments or the governments that are trying to move towards some type of Pan-African thought. Now, evidently, what you described is a government that is stable and moving towards some type of Pan-African thought by pushing by the youth.
I wouldn't say that's the government.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that's the government. I would say this is people on the ground doing this.
Okay.
We have to realize that African governments are not ruling themselves. And I think, you know, we have to be honest and recognize mm-hmm. that. When African governments do try to do for self, we see what happens to them. And, you know, we've seen it with the Sankaras, with the Lumumbas. You know, we've seen what happens to them. Yeah, they are taken out by the West. So a lot of our governments, you know, keep their head down. You know, they don't raise their head above the parapet, and they go along to get along. Now, that has to change in Africa, because if we keep saying, yes, Massa, we're always going to be saying, yes, Massa.
Okay.
We have to take the chance. And, you know, there's some changes now, because there's been a trade agreement, inter-Africa trade agreement.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that, but go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Right now. So that's happening. We don't know the details of it. We haven't seen the agreement. I'm hopeful that, you know, this is governments coming together and saying to themselves, look, we've got to free ourselves from these shackles. I'm hoping that's the case. But until we see the agreement, we won't really know. If that is the case, that we're saying, look, let's just pray it amongst ourselves. We've got a whole big continent here. We've got all the resources we need here. We don't need to trade outside of the continent, really, to be honest. And if governments are now waking up and saying, you know what, let's just trade amongst ourselves. If people want to trade with us, let them trade, but they're not coming to rape and pillage. If they want to buy something from us, they will pay whatever market rate we set, and they will work to any agreements that we put together. That will be the difference. And the AU should be assisting with that. I've also heard that the African governments are now reaching out to the Caribbean. Now, if the Caribbean and Africa can start working together, that would be a powerful force to be reckoned with. It's not going to be easy for those governments, because, you know, that's going to be a slap in the face for white supremacy.
Oh, most definitely.
That's going to be a slap in the face for neocolonialism. But that's what needs to happen. That's the blueprint that was left for us back from, you know, the 1930s, from Marcus Garvey onwards. So that's what we need to get back to. And if that can happen, then, you know, maybe not in our lifetime, because it will take time, but maybe in another two generations, it will be very, very different in Africa. We will start seeing that self-sufficiency and that self-reliance.
Let's go to a call here. Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? Caller, are you there?
Yeah. Is that me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I just turned it on. I was able to get y'all right. I want to know, with your country, do y'all offer be willing to offer dual citizenship for Afro-Americans?
That's something we're going to have to negotiate with if we get the citizenship. We haven't thrashed out all the details yet, but it's something that I would encourage. You know, part of our reparations is holding on to passports that enable us to travel around the world quite freely. I, for one, am not giving up my British passport because that's part of my reparations. So I will hold on to that, but I would also like to hold Gambian passport also. But that's something we're going to have to negotiate with the government.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
You know, and it raised the I just want to add this as just a commentary, I guess, because one of the understandings that I have is that in relationship to the trade, one thing in order to deal with for African countries to really, what I'm trying to say is that we need good trade representatives in order to negotiate and de-escalate the kind of stranglehold, as you say, the Francophone countries have or the European countries have over the trade relationships. From what I understand, there's not a lot of trade negotiators in these countries that have a continental view or from the perspective of their country themselves. And so they're being told by the World Bank and those bodies, those foreign bodies, basically how the trade relationship is supposed to go. And that's something that we have to look at as far as do the African countries have good trade negotiators that have mm-hmm. a Pan-Africanist perspective when they're negotiating? Because it's going to, as you say, it's going to be difficult to deal with from something that's been going on for, you know, a couple of centuries now. So that's one thing. And I want to praise you again, because as you were speaking, the thing that came to my mind that we do need people like yourself who are, I'm going to call them ambassadors. Technical ambassadors. You know, you're making a presentation to, the review committee. You're really operating as a representative of the diaspora, you know, in an African country. And I don't know if we have a lot of people like yourself in different countries who are seeing opportunity and having the ability to make the presentation at that appropriate point in time. So it is important for us to understand that's a technical position that those of us in the diaspora have to have when we're talking real politics. Would you agree with that or not?
Yes, I agree. And that's one of the things that I said that, you know, I mean, that was part of my role when I was working in the UK, one, public speaking, going into organisations and ensuring that their policies, practices and procedures were conducive to the law, etc. So why not bring those skills home and use them here? You know, they've been using our skills for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. And as I said, not appreciative of it. So why not bring those skills here and use them for our own benefit? So that's what I'm doing here. If I can use my skills that I gained in the UK, use them here in Africa to benefit our people, then why not do that?
And you know, Ellie, the reason why I see the sister's position is so important because it's unlike being a member of an NGO that's using your skills, you know, because we know the relationship between NGOs and these intergovernmental operations and diplomats, they still don't have African people, mm-hmm. African vision, or Africans of the diaspora in mind when they're, you know, doing their representation. So exactly. What you're saying is definitely important and powerful. And I'm hoping other out there who are listening in Time for Awakening audience who have the same skill sets and have the same aspiration of returning, you know, home, recognize this is a way that really they can be also be helpful to us in the diaspora when it comes to dual citizenship or citizenship or assisting in the development of constitution of different countries.
You know,
and I imagine there are other people around doing different things in different countries. I don't know of them, but I'm sure there are other people that have, you know, returned to Africa and trying to help with the development of Africa. You know, if we all just sow one seed, that's right. All it takes.
I know it. And you know, you mentioned in your conversation several times about remembering the ancestors. And I think about here, one of our ancestors here that struggled for our people, Harriet Tubman. Mm-hmm. When she escaped, she could have just went on and lived her life. But it was on her mind to help her people. And it's the same thing. You're operating that same spirit. You left the UK and went to Gambia, and you could have just lived your life, went into business and just lived out, you know, just concerned about you. Do you, as some of these folks say. But your mission and this organization's mission is to help our people in the diaspora, which includes Europe, the United States, the islands, to return home and to make the path smooth. So I congratulate you. I go along with Brother Richard. You're working in the spirit of our ancestors because it's about all of us.
Thank you.
Let's
get very frustrated because when I see the way our people are, one, thinking, and two, treated, I get very, very frustrated. And it's like, you know, why can't you just get off your backside and leave?
I understand.
Especially when you see these videos where, you know, in America, the police are gunning down black men like it's hunting season, or the police in the UK are just, you know, strangleholding young black men. And like, why are we still there?
Yeah, well, I don't
really,
know whether
really
you...
It really frustrates me. It really, really does.
I don't know whether you caught that. I don't know whether you listened to that clip I played on break. And the last voice that you heard was Cynthia McKinney when she gave that analogy of Roots and the character that played Toby. And she said at the end that it was dozens of our people standing by black that are just watching. So we can't, you know, all of our people need to be active in some fashion now to change this problem that we're facing. We need all hands on deck in some way. Everybody might not be able to be an activist like yourself, sister, but they can help you. They can help in some fashion. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and good evening to your guest, Sister Shekinah. Yes, it's Brother Marcus calling from Memphis.
How are you, sir?
And I'm doing great, good brothers. And I do commend the sister, you know, for making that being the advance guard into Africa. You know, for the last 3 years, I have seen an increase in interest in Africa by African people, and I see it's becoming more. It's blossoming more and more. So, you know, I think that we are moving in the right direction. I just want to make a few points because, as the sister was mentioning about the young population in Africa, and I think that agriculture should be one of the driving sectors we should develop in Africa. Mm-hmm. Is able to feed our people, you see, because at least if we're able to feed our people, you know, we'll be able to get their attention. You know, Bob Marley has a song that say, a hungry man is an angry man. And, you know, so if we can feed our people where we can come self-sustaining in food, then, you know, then we'll grow, because that's what made America grow. It was food. They had us in the cotton field, in the plantation, producing food, which gave them the free time to develop their, you know, industry and created the wealth that drove the Industrial Revolution. So I think food production is one thing we can definitely go into. Another thing I think we should look at also now, that we don't make a mistake here, like that was made in Liberia, is setting up a class system in Africa. You see, we have to be mindful of that. We have to develop an economic system where we returning, yes, we have more wealth from coming from the West here, but we have to integrate the people in Africa to where we pull them up also economically. You see, we don't want to go in where we develop a money class where we have all the money and they broke, because then that's going to be a problem in the future. So we have to develop joint ventures with our people there where we teach them and bring them up at the same time we all come up together. So we have balance in the economy. We don't want to have a problem like what encountered in Liberia, you know, civil war, and because them say, well, they come, they got all the money, and we broke here, and then, you know, it can be a problem. So those things we have to factor in also. And I see in Liberia is one of those countries where they are saying, yes, come. You know, in fact, I think they had a big Garvey Day celebration there. It was yesterday or today, you know. So, you know, but we definitely, Pan-Africanism is definitely on the rise. So, you know, we're moving in the right direction. And, you know, I will take this sister information and, you know, we keep on keeping on, good sister. Thank you so much. And thank you, good brothers, for the program.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the contribution, because you're absolutely right on both parts. Agriculture is so important, not only in Africa, but even in the Caribbean. Many young people think, you know, it's not a good career choice to be farmers. But, you know, when we think about all the GMO and the Santo and all these other things that are tampering with the natural food that's killing our people, food is the answer. We have to grow what we eat and be in control of what we eat. Healthy, natural, live food, because, you know, the mortality rate in Africa is still too low. It shouldn't be. You know, we have a different DNA to everybody else. We have all the food that we need on this continent, but yet, you know, we struggle to get to 60, 70 years old, which shouldn't be. We're dying, you know, of high blood pressure, diabetes, you know, strokes, all these sorts of illnesses that has nothing to do with us, nothing to do with us at all. But it's primarily from the food that the West is feeding us with. You know, everybody wants to buy in the supermarket because, you know, if you buy in the supermarket, you're showing a sign of wealth. Well, what about, you know, growing your own food? What about, you know, the carrots, the tomatoes, everything else? We need to grow those things ourselves. So, yes, you're right. We need a program of agriculture starting from the schools. Every family in Africa should have a plot of land where they could grow their own food, as it was in the beginning. You know, they shouldn't be struggling where, you know, where they haven't got a small space, even if it's a 20 by 20 space. They need that space where they can grow their food and sustain themselves. So I think you're absolutely right on that one. In terms of the class system, yes, I agree with that. It is about coming home and developing, but it's a two-way street on that. One, our brothers and sisters on the continent have got to accept us as Africans coming to help and not see us as something else. You know, right now I would say that the white man, the Chinese man, the Indian man, the Arab man, they're getting more respect than us. Because there's still this inferiority complex that, you know, because their skin is whiter looking, that they are better than us. And what a lot of our people don't understand is that these people don't have their interests at heart.
Mm-hmm.
They're just coming to get what they need to get, and they're doing that. You know, they'll come and say, oh, we'll build a road for you, we'll build a hospital. We can do that ourselves, thank you very much. Because what you're doing, you're giving us 10%, but you're taking 90%. That's not a fair trade. So we're back to the slave mentality that, you know, the white man's coming and bringing us something good, but they're taking hundreds of our people to work to produce their industrial revolution. We don't want to go back to those days. So I think many of us are coming here and we are employing. So people are getting jobs. I myself, I have a small building company, and so I employ architects, builders, electricians, plumbers, and they are getting work because the more the diasporans come home and want to build houses and properties, they're getting work from local Gambians who will do that work for them. And we're streamlining that work so that we only give our own people those jobs to do.
Okay.
So it can be done, but you're right. We have to be careful that we don't create a class system.
Sister Shekina, one or two more things before you go. You were talking about trying to make amendments to the Constitution there, and you have met with folks to do that. Do you think by the it was a published report that myself and Brother Richard was talking about, the actor Samuel Jackson was granted citizenship by Gambia because of his
Gabon.
Ancestors.
That was in Gabon.
That wasn't Gambia? Oh,
not Gambia.
I'm sorry.
It was in Gabon.
Okay.
He traced his ancestry to Gabon, and he visited there, and they gave him a passport.
Okay. All right. You know what? Just from your knowledge base, do you think that's a pathway back for some of our people to trace their ancestry, and if they find out that they're from certain areas, appeal to those governments?
Yes, they can. I suppose for me, I don't recognize the 50-odd borders that wasn't created by us.
Okay. Okay.
You know, we didn't give permission for them to cut up Africa.
Okay.
You know, we're a people that come from large empires. We didn't have to go around the world raping and pillaging and killing to create empires like Great Britain, as they used to call themselves. We had empires. So for me, I claim the whole continent. I don't, you know, I live in Gambia, yes, but I'm an African first.
Okay.
I'm not defined by a country. But if people want to trace their ancestry to where they've come from, that's absolutely fine. I have no interest in doing that because I know I'm African. I don't need to narrow it down to a region.
Okay.
I claim the whole continent. So, yeah, people can do that and go to that place if they want to. Or, you know, people can just decide they want to go somewhere in Africa. The important thing is we return home. That's the most important thing. Just return home.
Okay. With that mindset.
Around the continent.
Okay.
With the mindset, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, before, I just wanted to know, because I'm always interested or in need of finding direct information coming out of the continent that kind of speaks to from the perspective of the ground. Is there informational outlets in Gambia that reflect your views and the views of some of the young people now that you could suggest that we may look or listen to, you know, just to keep with the dynamics there instead of what is put out in general magazines, reports?
Yeah, there's not a lot, but if you look on YouTube, just today I found something. They interviewed a group of young people on the street in Gambia, and they were you know, they were talking about, you know, the government needs to do more, or people need to do more, but they were speaking very much in terms of where they see the country needs to go. I think it's called Street Interview with Local Gambians or something like that. But it will come up on YouTube.
Okay.
And it's a very interesting conversation, quite interesting revelations that came out from young people. There was, I think, two older men from the Ministry of Tourism that were there that were not in agreement with what the young people were saying. But, you know, the young people are underground, mm-hmm. as they say, who feels it knows it. And they were trying to communicate to them, you know, what they see as they go about their daily lives, what they experience, you know, during their daily lives. But, you know, sometimes the elders don't listen to what the young people are saying.
Thank you. Let's grab one more call before we transition. 404.
Hey, peace and blessing to Elliot. How y'all doing? Y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Oh yeah, man. Good topic tonight, man. That sister from Gambia, I agree with you wholeheartedly, man. Okay, what she just said. Okay, how we've been tricked by these Europeans over here too, man. With this brother against brother crap. Okay, I was talking to some Africans today on the job, one from the Congo and one from Sierra Leone. Okay? Mm-hmm. And it's time for this doggone tribal warfare to stop. The Hutu and Tutsis and these doggone and Nigeria, them Igbo and the mother ones, the time for all that tribal crap to stop. Okay?
Yes.
That's our whole problem, man. That's our whole problem there. You got Nigeria, them Igbos, and them Yorubas arguing and fighting. It's time for that to stop, man. Over there and over here, too. Okay? And I talked to them brothers, man. And you, Elliot, you saw the thing where that white lady went over there talking about she a nurse and killed all them children. Okay? You just posted that, Elliot.
Yeah.
Okay? And plus another thing, with Africans over there and over here, too, we grow these Europeans, man. I told the Africans, as soon as somebody white show up over there, they go to buck dancing and partying for them folk. They cooking a hog and like they gods or something. It's time for that to stop, man. Okay? I done got on them, man. That's the whole problem. They're too doggone nice, man. Much of them Europeans have done to us every time. Like when the queen go over there, what the other, Mark and them go over there, Harry or David or something, they go to partying and start dancing, man, and throwing them a party, man. Okay? That I don't like. Okay? That pissed me off. That's why. Can we stop doing that, man? Okay, then we come together, man. Okay, because what we should have done, when they showed up over there, they should have chopped their damn neck off and sunk their damn boats like them other people did at the island around Thanksgiving when them devils showed up. You know that, Elliot, that story we talked about. You remember that story, Elliot?
Not offhand, but go ahead. Finish your thought.
Yeah, you remember that story, man, that island somewhere where the people that lived on the island. When this Chinese boy come over there with the Bible, and they told him,
talking about recently. Okay.
He came back over there.
Yeah.
And he got dealt with severely, man. Okay, that's what we got to do, start closing ranks. And it was a brother in Gambia that sold me out on the job. I don't want to call his name, but, you know, I forgive him. But he sold me out on his white folk job, man. And he's from Gambia. Well, I look at it. He's still mine. They got his mind. And so I let it go. Okay, because I ain't got time to be weighted down by carrying grudges, man. But my point is, the time for us to come together, man, stop this tribal stuff, bro, over there and over here, and peace and blessing, man. I love you, my sister, and I'm just like you, man. It's time for the United States of Africa, 54 countries, to come together and start their own doggone currency with United States of Africa. Okay, this mega hat. I got a mega hat, too. Make Africa great again. Okay? That's the mega hat.
Well,
All right, peace and blessing, y'all.
I'm glad you cleared that up, brother.
That's right.
Peace.
Make Africa great again, bro.
All right.
All right.
Peace.
Peace and blessings. I love y'all.
I'm glad he cleared that up, Richard. He said he had a MAGA hat. Sister Shakina. Sister Shakina. Sister Shakina, are you there? Uh-oh, I done lost everybody. What's going on here? Richard?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I must have lost Sister Shakina. Sister Shakina? Can you hear me? Richard?
Yeah.
I must have lost her.
Oh.
I want to kind of let her... you know, give out any contacts or anything of that nature. Wow. Hopefully she'll reach back out. I must have lost her.
I see she's still up on the board.
Yeah. But she's gone.
Well, I wonder if the signal broke down there.
Let me take, because I want to try to get her back on. Let me just take a brief break. And then when we come back, let's see if we can kind of retrieve her, because I want to kind of give her an opportunity to... you know, to give any last things that she want to say and give out any contacts or anything of that nature. We'll come back. Give me a few minutes. We'll take a brief break. And when we come back, Hopefully we can wind things up with Sister Shekinah Chinadu of the African Diaspora Returnees Association. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kamban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. And with this new sense of dignity and this new sense of self-respect, a new Negro came into being with a new determination to suffer, to struggle, to sacrifice, and even to die if necessary in order to be free.
Hang on to the world as it spins around.
All our people are righteous by nature. Wicked by circumstance, so we are going to try to save our people. take control of our communities. Anybody that wants justice, come out of those parties that won't give you justice, and let's have a justice party and set up our own candidates, run them in the cities, take down the weak, blood suckers of the poor, and cast them out, and set up people that will fight for justice for us.
Because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world. There's a whole lot of illusions about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these belief systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And there's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said, there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion, was meant to dominate and to control. The Arabs had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive? You let people redress something that you invented, sell it back to you, and enslave you through it.
If we are to defeat the European, if we are to master this earth and take back this earth from the European, then we must outthink the European. We must then be creative. That puts the learning emphasis on the how-ness, the how to think as such, and to the use of knowledge as a tool of mastery. So it's a very different kind of thing. As a result, you see, of the control and the paternalism of Europeans over black people. You see, the other thing that we must recognize, even if the European becomes good and nice and accepts us and so forth, the fact that he would still be in control creates a what we might call a benevolent paternalism, which still to a great degree helps to maintain this passive mode of thinking, this passive mode of knowledge.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And I think we have our guest back, Sister Shekinah Chinadu of the African Diaspora Returnees Association. I want her to give her a chance to kind of wind things down for us. Sister Shekinah, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now. Good. We got you back.
Excellent.
I just want to give you an opportunity to kind of give our listening audience any contacts if they want to reach out to you, if they're thinking about repatriating, returning to the continent, how they can reach you and the organization, anything that you want to give to your listening audience, the time is yours.
Okay, well, thank you for having me on the show, first and foremost. And thank you to your listeners for engaging. And what I would say to our people is, you know, we can see what's happening in the West, and we need to have a plan B. Don't wait until it's too late. Start planning from now. Africa is not out of your reach. It is possible. I'm not going to say it's always easy, but it's possible. And you'll have a better life here than you'll have in the West. You know, I was saying to a friend the other day, it's almost 3 years since I've experienced racism. And it's wonderful because throughout my career, you know, this was something I came to expect every day as I walked into the workplace or going about my daily business. I don't have that problem here in Africa. I might have other issues, but it's certainly not based on the color of my skin. And that is really liberating. So, you know, have a plan B. Think about it. Visit the continent. See what you think. It'll be, you know, if you take it from BBC or CNN or all these other media companies, you'll never come to Africa. Come and see for yourself, make up your own mind. But have a plan. Think about how you're going to generate an income. Think about how you're going to live for the next 20, 30 years. How you're going to sustain yourself. Think about leaving a legacy for your family. And, you know, really, you know, we should start leaving a legacy here in Africa for our people, even if it's just a holiday home. Leave something here to encourage our people to come and visit and spend some time and get reacclimatized with the culture. If you want to contact me in Gambia, you can contact me on email, Nubian544@AOL.com. Nubian544@AOL.com. And I'll try and assist with any questions that you have. If you ever visit Gambia, email me and look me up. I'll try and meet up with you. And yeah, just as I said, just keep thinking and planning, you know, how we're going to do for self as African people. We've tried the West, you know, clearly it's not working for us. Let's try something else. And, you know, why not try Africa?
Sister Kina,
yes.
Before you leave, just repeat that contact again, that email.
Nubian544@AOL.com.
Great. And I thank you for being with us, sister. I'm going to keep your number in my contact, well, your contacts in my contacts, because I want you to reach back out to us. Let us know how things went as far as the constitutional change. In any new developments, yeah. Any information you want to share with us, the door is always open to you, sister.
Thank you. I will do.
And be able to push me, because I want to get in on that estate now.
Well, keep in touch with me.
I'll be in touch, because we got some listeners that are interested in things of that nature, and they might want to make that move.
Okay, well, in the new year, estate number 2 will be starting. So, yeah, we'll have some more plots open for our people. It's about, you know, ensuring that our people can come home. It's affordable. And, you know, the longer people leave it, the more land prices are going up. So we've got to grab it now, because other people are coming and they're buying up all the land. And then, you know, the silly thing is they're selling it back to us 5-6 years down the line when they've made a massive profit.
Yes.
Wow.
And we need to stop that.
Sister, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Can I just ask, have you recorded it?
Yes. I'll make sure that you get it.
Thank you. Because, you know, because of the time, many people were not able to stay up and listen, but I would like to share it.
Yeah, and I don't want to hold you, because it's about, what, 2 in the morning there?
It's 1:03.
Okay, I'm going to let you go.
Oh, Lord.
Thank you for being here.
You see how we get
with it?
Thank you very much for all you've done and doing.
Thank you. I'm enjoying myself. I really am.
All right. Peace.
Peace now.
Okay, stay blessed.
All right. Richard, you know, I'm kind of glad that we had her on.
Yes.
More options again. You know, we don't have to sit back and complain. We got to get out of here. I hate it here. And, you know, listen, a lot of our people got legitimate reasons. We all have legitimate reasons. But you know, I just kind of credit what we do, man, to always have avenues to reach out to people that's doing work and that can share it with the listening audience. I mean, she could have went over there and just lived her life. But for her to start an organization to help other people come and do what she's doing, that's working in the pathway and the mindset of our ancestors.
And definitely having this discussion, you know, the day after Marcus Garvey's birthday fits very well in that whole thing of reclamation and repatriation and, you know, Pan-Africanism, you know, with all, as you said, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Richard, you know, before we go, because and it's something that she mentioned that that was on my mind, doing it, coming on the program this evening. But it's something that she mentioned right in the beginning when she talked about it's necessary for our people to have a plan, number one, and to really have your mind prepared or have a mindset change or be ready to deal with things before you come to the continent. Prepare your mind. A mindset change. All these things we've talked about at length on the program. Because other people want to deal with our mind. Other people want to control our behaviors and control people that they put in front of us in all veins and all stratas. The reason I'm saying that is you look at people that had, maybe they had a track record of being historical icons, but now they're part of the system. Whether you're talking about the John Lewis's or some of the others, but they're getting older. But now you see that some of these people that can control the dynamics here anyway is looking to develop a new group of a different generation. Look at what has happened with this thing with around Jay-Z and this NFL, the deal that he signed with them.
Yeah.
Look at it's a young black quarterback plays for Houston Texans, Deshaun Watson, went over there and was religiously baptized or whatever, did some type of service in Israel. A Draymond Green, who plays basketball for the Golden State Warriors, over there taking publicity shots or whatever, firing guns pointed at the area where Palestinians live. See, all of this, developing this new crop, what they consider a new crop, a new generation. Some of these young politicians that you see out there have come through that political school, so to speak, that AIPAC has been funding. And I'm not just dealing with AIPAC necessarily or Jewish. Because whether you're Eastern European, which is Russian, whether you're European or Anglo, or white, or whether you are Germanic, European or Jewish, it's European. The necessity to control the minds of black people is what I'm talking about. It was an article I just posted on Time for Awakening on the Facebook page that in Illinois, did you see that, Richard?
No, not yet.
In Illinois, our people that's on these plantations, prison plantations, it's a ban on black history and empowerment books to be removed from the inmate programs. So when you're sitting in there now and you might want to change your mindset and start maybe strengthening your mind, those reading materials will be unavailable. Definitely, if you get a chance, check it out. It's a ban on books. Huh? Say that again?
It's definitely a war.
Yeah, it's
definitely a war.
Yeah, it's a ban on books on black history and empowerment from the inmate program that was removed. But that's the same state that said that in public schools that LGBTQ history is going to be mandatory to be taught. Now, I don't know what LGBTQ history is supposed to mean, but it's going to be taught, and it's going to be taught to our children. See, these are we got to understand what we're dealing with. We can't be asleep. These people are thinking all the time, and they're thinking about you. If you look at the history of this country, Richard, that's what all the historical debates have been about all through the years. From before 1776 to the present, about you and your presence here in this country. If our people don't believe it, just go back and look at the historical record. Look at it. I mean, you've talked about it on several occasions, Richard. But these discussions have always been centered around you. and the problem that they envision having you here. It was always a weird dynamic with Europeans. They didn't want you here, but they wanted you here to do work and to do other things. But some of these founding fathers knew that years from now, and I'm talking about 50, 100 years, 200 years from now, that you would be a problem to them because they talked about it in their writings. You've seen it.
Sure enough.
So being that we were going to be here, they was trying to make sure that they control the narrative, control our thinking. And once some of the other ones start getting up in age, they got to change it and reach out to others. Now you got a hip hop artist who made his bones and his basically his fortune on young black folks. Now his audience might have changed because white folks listen to his music now. But I remember when Kaepernick started protesting and kneeling, and Eric Reed and a few others, mm-hmm. Kenny Stills started joining him. And then he got kicked out of that National Football League. That he seemed to be behind him. He was making statements and sending out tweets. You know, they love the social media, mm-hmm. sending out tweets where he was in favor, in his camp. In fact, his wife, last year in the Super Bowl, she refused to do the halftime, to do the music, because she stated because of him, Colin Kaepernick. But now you turn around and join the same people that you claim you've been against. And some of the men that have been fighting on this issue have spoken out against him. Eric Reed, Kaepernick, and others have sent out tweets on social media against what he did. And sure, they're going to try to justify it. But there is what type of justification is this? You're sitting around making deals to these white owners that are Trump supporters that's wearing MAGA hats. And I ain't talking about the MAGA hat that our caller out of Atlanta said that he wears. They're wearing Trump-supporting hats. They give thousands of dollars, maybe millions, to his campaigns, his election funds. You know where they stand. When this issue started and they jumped all over the quarterback, Kaepernick, you know where these people stand. So instead of you standing with the brother, you're going to join in. I don't know what type of mind. I can't beat them, join them. I don't know what is the thinking there. All I know is that you make yourself an enemy to the community. And our people need to stop being foolish and start calling a spade a spade. I know some of our ancestors, they didn't want us talking about one another. And Francis Cresswell's and Neely Fuller, they got, in their mind that we shouldn't criticize our brother. Listen, I agree with 99.9% of the things that they talk about, but I don't agree with that. If a man has become your enemy, if we're fighting on the side, Richard, whatever the issue is, physically fighting, playing a game, whatever, and I turn around and look, and I see you on the other side helping other people, what are you to me? You're not a friend. If I see you developing strategies on the other side of how you can best get to me, and we were working together at one time, or we look alike or supposed to be on the same team, and then I see you developing strategies and aiding other people, what the hell are you? Maybe you can explain it to me. What am I supposed to call you, a friend? I'm not supposed to say anything. You're a danger to the people. People need to know about you. Because if you leave the environment and go around somebody else that don't know you, you can cause serious harm. That's what happened during the quote-unquote Black Power movement. You had people that were working for the FBI that was moving around from group to group and causing damage, causing people to be in prison, political prisoners, causing people to be killed. Those people cause serious damage. You can't look at them, but you can't have that philosophy. You can't criticize our people. I don't agree with that. Don't agree. I mean, go ahead, Richard. I didn't.
No. It's a rough. You know, I've been listening to people on this, you know, one way or another, and it's a couple of things I guess we need to, you know, explore. But one thing that I heard that is this notion, well, my fear that we have to deal with, because we have to deal with it, as you say, there's been a pop of game changers or guards that are being developed in order to, you know, whether you call it keep people asleep, put parameters around their mindset. I mean, when you mentioned about the books and what will be read and what not will be read, and who you should look at that will keep you in the same cage. But it's this notion, this philosophy of having a seat at the table. That's one thing that I think.
Well, that's the excuse that's used, Richard. That's an excuse.
Mm-hmm. But so it seems that
there's a certain
belief that that's an exhibition or demonstration or something of power to have someone having a seat at the table, regardless how they got there. That's a demonstration of power as it relates to social change. I think we have to deal with that, you know, because it does get into, you know, some understanding. Is that having a person have a seat at the table, even if they're called to the table, will that guarantee social change, structural change? But it may be a large population within that group that he represents that believe that so. But I think we need to deal with that, because the first thing comes to my mind is, and I don't know if this works as a historical, and I might have used it before, but the Negro Baseball League. They brought Jackie Robinson to the table, right?
Okay.
But by bringing him to the table, it decimated a total economy of the Negro Baseball League. Because he came to the table and it disrupted that whole, I mean, the businesses that were supported by the Negro Baseball League, the hotels, the restaurants, the clothing wear, the transportation, all of that was decimated by Jackie becoming the symbol of going to the National Baseball League.
Well, let me ask you a question dealing with that, Richard, mm-hmm. that thought. Do you think that was their objective all along?
Yes.
All right. Because they didn't care nothing about Jackie as a black man. That was their objective all along. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I just want...
It's a different context when we're talking about power, because it would have been one thing if the Negro Baseball League owner said, in order to create, broaden our market, right? Because it was a business thing to broaden our market. We've made a deal to where we're going to have one of our players play on the team, not where it was reversed. They looked around and said, who could we bring over? Because what did they, it wasn't that the fans sent a Jackie Robinson type or the Negro Baseball League sent a Jackie Robinson type. That would have been a demonstration of power.
Power,
you
exactly.
Send your representative to another entity as a part of your negotiation. They selected a player. Now, you had a better than Jackie, but they picked Jackie because of his temperament.
Mm-hmm.
Of his mindset. And the fans of the Negro Baseball League wanted to be a members of, because they had their mind, even though they didn't see what they had developed, the social capital, the businesses, the economic wealth that could have been transferred. The fans, black fans, didn't see that,
because as soon as they got Jackie and they said, oh, we got seats for y'all, did the black fans go to those games, which meant that they didn't no longer supported the Negro Baseball League?
Yeah, they went.
Right? Which, as you say, that was a strategic intent, because that would have been a competition of business, because even white fans wanted to see the best players. It was only because of segregation that they didn't go. But they knew the best players was in the Negro Baseball League. Right? So it's as you say, it's the mindset of the fans that decimated their own economic foundation that would have been transferable wealth. So when we talk about now, though, here is somebody built up wealth as an individual off of his hustle, they're saying. And then supposedly making a deal to get sit at the table, being asked, because I think when people were trying to buy in teams, they said, I ain't into sports, but you correct me if I'm wrong. Somebody wanted to buy a team and they wouldn't sell it to them.
Yeah, supposedly, and they want to, because that's basically a private club, those 33 owners. It's a license to print money. And they don't have any of these sports teams. I remember when they had the basketball team that started in Brooklyn. I think it was Jay-Z and a couple of them were supposed to have been part owners in that. That was a fantasy. They just used their face in order to kind of get a little foothold. The same thing here. When there was new ownership of the Philadelphia 76ers team, they were saying that Will Smith was a part owner, you know, because he was from this city. You've seen him at several games sitting courtside, and, you know, people think, especially black folks, think that he got some financial interest. He had financial interest in his team.
Now, the distinction here is that Jay-Z is supposed to be a social change agent. That move Kaepernick was supposed to be about social change. So he's coming in as he's getting a seat at the table, and that's going to be about social change. Well, this generation, if they're thinking that seat, real or unreal, is going to structurally change anything, I'm delusional.
Yeah, well, okay. But their strategy, your mic is breaking up a little bit. Their strategy seems to be the same, Richard, because they all figured if you throw money at black folks, whatever principle they had, they're going to basically throw it out the window. That's what seems to be the formula. If I can throw some money at you, then whatever stance you took or whatever, you'll throw it out the window. And by and large, you do have some cases where that didn't work, but by and large, it has worked on a lot of these people. It has worked. And I'm glad that you use that example, too, of Jackie. Because if Jackie was chosen if Negro League teams had gotten together and said, listen, we want some guys to go in here. We don't just want Jackie. We want Josh Gibson. We want Cool Papa Bell. We want several guys. If they want to then take all of these men. No, those white owners, Branch Richie and them, Branch Rickey, they chose Jackie. So when you got people that go to these organizations and join in and buy in, become owners, sit on boards and all this stuff, and then when they're caught, start talking stuff about sitting at the table. See, grassroots organizations didn't choose you to go and do this as a strategy.
Right.
Somebody else chose you and says, listen, I think Richard White will be a good candidate. A group didn't get together and say, Richard, listen, go and sit and see what these people are talking about and bring the information back to us. No, that wasn't. Somebody else chose you. And then when it comes to light, hey, Richard, what you doing? Oh, somebody got to sit at the table. Come on, that's an excuse, Richard.
Yeah.
That's an excuse.
Have a particular mindset if we continue that metaphor of Jackie, because when Paul Robeson, who was definitely also an entertainer and an artist, but took a principal stand and took it in relationship to African people and the oppression African people was experiencing, using his position as an artist, losing, because he took that principal stand, the mindset of a Jackie Robinson was not supportive of that principal stand. It was non-supportive. So when they selected somebody to do, they selected somebody not just because of their particular talent. They selected them because of a certain mindset that, like when they were spitting on them, calling them all kind of names. He had to have us where those other guys, they wouldn't have took that. And they knew they wouldn't have took that. They would have been rocking and rolling in there.
Yeah, well, you know, if you read his book, his autobiography, it took a lot out of him to take that himself. I think personally that's what led him to an early grave. I think Jackie died, when was he, 54, Richard? I think it was 54, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If you've seen pictures of Jackie when he died, just before he died, he looked like he was 84, not 54. He looked like he was 84.
And he said he apologized for the position he took against, later on, he apologized for the position he took against Paul Robeson.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what they required of those men. That's what they required of them. That's what they required. What does he think? This Jay-Z that signed this agreement with the NFL, what do he think they're going to require of him? Or maybe he don't care because they done threw a couple million dollars, however many millions at him. Maybe he don't care to produce the music entertainment for the NFL.
And unfortunately, those that generational, or not just generational, because I hear the support for that position.
Yeah, I mean, you know you're going to hear it. Some of our people are ignorant. They don't know what's going on. Produce the musical entertainment for the NFL. They already had some old racist hillbillies singing some songs, racist hillbilly Trump supporting, singing the NFL theme or whatever on Monday night or whatever. These guys, I mean, come on here. Our people got to wake up. These people are using our people. And them being that they're in front of our people in positions of what they consider power, whether it's entertainers, sports entertainment, up-and-coming politicians like a Cory Booker and others who used to be the mayor of Trenton was something else before that. Now he's a state, he's a U.S. senator. All these guys, you look who's been pushing these people. Where's the money coming from? Who are they answering to? We got to hold these people accountable and responsible for this type of stuff, Richard. And the better we educate ourselves on who they are, then we'll know how to approach them.
And I'll leave it alone after this, but because what I'm looking at, Elliot, is in the characterization that Sister McKinney gives using Roots, of those people sitting on the sidelines, and I'll even include myself when it comes to the acquisition of power, because if we don't get off the sideline, I know all of them want to get off the sideline, but it's a lot of us who's sitting on the sideline who know better. Right, but we're still standing on the sideline. We hear, we're listening to, say, Time for Awakening. We're listening to Sister Sakina, you know, from that's in Gambia. We're aware of that, but we're still sitting on the sideline. And in the meantime, these people are making these kind of moves.
Moves. Mm-hmm. And then we react later on.
But when we get off the sideline and then identify the type of leadership, because we're talking about, we are now looking, we know what's being played, and we're looking for true power. We ain't looking for window dressing power. We're operating from a sovereign position. Then we send a negotiator. That's if we want to do that, because I take the position that you, and I don't, you know, ever since you've been reading the brothers, the ministers that spoke to general during Reconstruction, what did they say? We just want to be left alone. Didn't they say that?
That was their voice. That was their consensus voice.
We know that they don't want to be bothered with us. We don't want to be bothered with them. We just want to. And they were representatives speaking for the people who sent them. That's the difference. Yeah. They weren't individuals looking out for themselves and the people thinking that they're going to help them. They were people looking out for the peep constituency of people. And that's those of us who are on the sidelines have to get off the sidelines, because we know better, and supposedly because we know better, we're supposed to do better. Because as long as we're on the sideline, what is being done is going to be done to all of us, unless we show better and they respect what we show. Other than that, they'll pull out Jay-Z's and Meek Mill's and a whole lot of other people. Now they got, Carly B. And that's for that generation.
Exactly.
Who will not even know Jackie Robinson or the Negro Baseball League and what went down, let alone Rosa Parks and maybe Harriet.
You know, it's kind of funny that, I remember when Meek Mill got in trouble here in Philadelphia. And all of a sudden, you seen the owners of these teams, all of a sudden, they lobbying for him. Robert Kraft. He ain't nothing but a Republican Trump, friend of Trump. He's all at Sixers games. They went and got him out of jail. He's palling around. And that kind of left me scratching my head like, listen, I know these people. All of us should know these people and know how they operate, that they had some type of plan. But for the life of me, Richard, I couldn't put my finger on it, because I'm saying, what do they want with him? They don't know nothing about no Meek Mill, and they couldn't name a song that he sung. Hell, I can't name a song that he sung, to be honest. But I was wondering, what did they want? Now it's starting to come to fruition what they even wanted with him in the beginning. They had plans, and it just wasn't no slip job. They was working out these plans.
And from what I understand, Meek Mills represent a generation below Jay-Z.
But that's what I'm saying. Now it comes full circle, what they wanted all along. We can't be giving no excuses for these people. Get that money. Get the dollar. Whatever, some old dumbass slang sayings. Come on. Our people got to be smarter than this. We can't keep repeating the mistakes out of history. And especially dealing with the UMPNs and how they've been dealing with us. We got to be smarter than this. This law that they passed with a bipartisan is supposed to be all this Republican. He's our enemy. But when things get done, it's always bipartisan support. Now, this law that they passed, and the Black Caucus passed it overwhelmingly too, this BDS ruling. If you remember, we discussed it, Richard, about 3 weeks ago, maybe a little longer, that they was going to leave it up to the states on how they was going to enact penalties in reference to it. You remember?
Yep.
So now we see that they was trying to stop that, and eventually basically stop that, the two congresswomen, or the one, from coming over there to see her mother. And they used that law. Netanyahu turned around and said, well, it ain't us. You signed a law. Congress signed a law. So we're just going by the law. But the thing is this, Richard. Black people ought to be demanding that their representatives, all these Black caucus represent Black areas, demanding to tell us what is this you're doing? Because according to the poll that was taken, Richard, if you remember, black folks don't support the nation of Israel. But you got people that have signed things into, went along and signed something into law that might hurt black people, grassroots groups, or anything that says anything against Israel or their policies. That's the thing. Not necessarily against their country, their policies. So, you still with me? I must have lost Richard. Ain't no problem because we winding things down anyway and we don't want to go over. Listen, I want to get the lineup.
Are you there?
Yeah. Yeah, we got to do a loop. I'm going to get that thing there because I think your thing is, your audio is kind of failing. We'll get it straight. I want to kind of wind things down, and unless you had something else you wanted to mention on that.
No.
Yeah, I want to kind of wind things down and give the lineup for this week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Ushi. Always lively discussion on African perspectives. After Brother Ushi's program, from 1 to 3, it's Black Reality. It's the Black People's Matrix, I'm sorry, with Brother Franklin Jones. From 1 to 3 on Time for an Awakening. From 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. That's 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening Media. This Monday, I'm more than sure, the 1st and 3rd Monday from 9 to 10 is Conversation Reparations within Cobra on Time for Awakening Media. And from 10 to 12, The Warren Valentine podcast, that's Mondays through Fridays from 10 to 12 on Time for Awakening. On Tuesday from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. On Wednesday, 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC on Time for an Awakening Media. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 to 8 on Time for an Awakening Media. And on Fridays, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. I want to thank everybody, including our guest this evening, Sister Shekinah Chinadu, for being with us this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be